Good morning. This is Bruce Silverman.
And this is Jay Thiemeyer.
This morning we're going to give you some reviews of films that are in the Portland International Film Festival, which begins this evening and continues for 2.5 weeks in downtown Portland. The festival is an annual event put on by the Northwest Film Center. And if you'd like to follow us as we describe the films that we've been able to see so far, you can do it either of two ways. One is to go to the Northwest Film Center's website, nwfilm.org. Go there right now so you can join us. Or if you have picked up a free copy of the festival schedule around town, the printed copy, we're going to follow this in the order that it's printed and the order that it's on the website, which is country by country. There are about 80 films in the festival, plus 5 sets of short films. No one can see them all, so we're here to try and help you decide which films to see. We'll tell you a little bit about whether we like or dislike a particular film, but we also just intend to tell you what type of film it is, what feeling you may get out of it, whether it's a cowboy film or a love story or something like that. Okay, as you follow in your guide or online, the first film we're going to talk about is from Denmark. It's called Terribly Happy. And this is a remake of something that has come out of Hollywood many times. It's a film about a new sheriff arriving in town. The old sheriff has disappeared. The new man is not told why, but he thinks he's getting an easy job in a quiet little town, and things start going wrong pretty quickly. Ultimately, the question is, will this man be corrupted by the corrupt town, or will he stick with defending the law? I think it's a pretty good film. I gave it a B on a scale of A to F. I will say that it has a good ending. I won't tell you whether the ending is happy or sad, but it's a good ending for the film.
The next film we'll talk about is A Prophet. It's a French movie, and I thought it was excellent on a lot of different levels. It focuses on a young Arab man who is introduced to this decrepit, violent prison in southern France that is dominated by this French or Corsican mob figure who is sort of the patriarch of this Corsican presence which dominates the prison. This young man is one of the few Arabs there at the beginning of the movie. Over the course of the movie, the Arabs displace the Corsicans. And to watch this young man's progress through the film, how his role changes in the prison, is extraordinary. It was very involving, in my opinion. The movie has a lot of violence, a lot of extreme gore. It's not for the squeamish. I thought it was very well developed throughout, and I highly recommend it.
I agree, Jay. The lead character evolves. We often don't see a character evolve. It's sort of a picture, a snapshot in time. But this character evolves due to the circumstances, and it's a good storyline. It held my attention all the way through, despite the length of 2.5 hours. So I give this a strong recommendation. A Prophet from France.
The next movie, also from France, is Girl on a Train. And this, to me, was very similar in its study of familial airtightness, the familial bubble, to I Am Love with Tilda Swinton. This film focused on a young woman who claimed that she had been assaulted by anti-Semites and that it was a race hatred situation. It turned out she was lying. And what's implicit in this whole film is why she lied, why she needed to get that attention, why that was being denied. And to me, what it said vividly was the airtightness, the lack of flexibility, the lack of humanness in this family in France. Her mother, Catherine Deneuve, is very effective as a very chilly mother for this young woman who has trouble expressing herself except in self-destructive or self-embarrassing ways. I thought it was interesting because of the roughly a dozen family members. They all had roles that were well scripted and that they adhered to absolutely. There was no bend, except for this woman who was dealing with her agony, and a young 13-year-old Jewish boy approaching his bar mitzvah, who says, Who am I? I have had a liberal education in France. I have been raised in the Jewish religion, and I have no freedom. And that, to me, speaks volumes to this air tightness that I'm talking about. Very interesting movie. Interesting comparison between this movie and a movie we'll be talking about shortly called Fish Tank, placed focusing on a woman in the British projects.
The film from Great Britain, Fish Tank, is a good drama. There's a teenage girl who has one great thing going for her. She can break dance really well, and she loves to do it. But otherwise, she's insecure, as any teenager is. She's sharp. She's independent, or wants to be, but she's looking for validation. Her mother is a total mess, a drunk who likes to party. There's no husband. The mother has a boyfriend who, as soon as he comes into the picture, you realize that he's also got his eye on the daughter. So that's pretty creepy. Jay?
The interesting thing to me, this was located near Cardiff. It was on the sea. And the fact is that the sea looked faded, bleached out, colorless, as did everything else in the movie. It's a very bleak, grim movie. Andrea Arnold, incidentally, is an up-and-coming woman director, woman filmmaker, which is unfortunately very significant. She reminds me of local filmmaker Kelly Reichardt, who has done Old Joy and Wendy and Lucy, which got a good reception last year, with Michelle Williams playing a character which the woman in this film, Fish Tank, reminded me very much of her. She was basically sort of flotsam, floating on life, handling reactively to what life threw her, and none of which was very good. And the difference being that the character in Fish Tank is an alpha character who has a lot that she wants to do with life. She wants to live, and yet she is denied every possibility, has no opportunity. She's beaten down by circumstances, and yet, as we'll see, she survives in one form or another. It's a fascinating movie, and I think Andrea Arnold is somebody to watch.
Okay, that's Fish Tank from Great Britain. The next film we'll talk about is from Iran. It's called About Ellie. And I have to tell you, I have developed a prejudice against some Iranian films. Such a high percentage of them are about the woman who is confined by her family, by her religion, and can't express herself, can't get out, can't do anything. This is kind of the same, but actually it's different. And to me, it's better than average. This film is about a group of friends, middle-class, middle-aged, young to middle-aged friends, but it turns into a mystery. First, they're going to the seashore, and they're going to spend a few days at a simple cabin. But it gets dramatic very quickly. I won't tell you why, but I will tell you that the dramatic scene comes suddenly, and it's really realistic. And then we see the dynamics among friends. Family obligations are very strong here. And Jay, that's really getting to be a theme here, isn't it, in the films we've seen?
Yeah, I think the interesting thing is that family is, as an institution, is a subject of a number of these films. The role of women within that construct is another ongoing theme. And as far as family goes, how it's conveyed, how successfully that complexity of being both a prison and a catapult for the feature, the characters who are the focus of the film, how that plays out determines, in my mind, the success of the movies.
So as a drama, this is very good. I kept guessing. The viewer has to keep guessing about who's telling the truth, what's going to happen next. And that's good entertainment. So that's called About Ellie. It's from Iran. Our next film is from Israel. It's called Ajami, which is the name of a neighborhood in Jaffa. It's a Muslim neighborhood, kind of a rough place. And this film is getting a lot of attention. It won the award at the Cannes Film Festival in France. Best first film by a director. Actually, they're co-directors. One is a Jew and one is a Muslim. And they worked together, which is probably unprecedented in Israeli film. This film also is one of the 5 finalists for Best Foreign Film at the Oscars. This film has a number of things going for it. One of them is that the directors are the screenwriters, too. They've chosen to have several different threads, several different plot lines going, different people who live in the same neighborhood, and these things all do intersect toward the end. Another theme that runs through this is the behavior of the police toward Arab citizens. These are citizens of Israel. It's not the Palestinian territories. But the difference in the way the police treat Arabs when they come into their homes searching for goods or people and the way they treat Jewish citizens is quite stark. The tension between the police and those citizens that they look down upon is not the only tension going on here.
For instance, there's an interaction between Arabs and who are neighbors of a Jewish man who complains about noise. Now, this is a simple conflict, but it seems to indicate the ongoing intensity of the conflict, that it doesn't resolve itself. It just becomes more and more violent. And what you see throughout the movie is this ongoing tension that whenever there's any sort of interface between the Arabs and the Jews, it invariably results in violence.
One other point I'd like to make about this one is that most of the actors are not professional actors at all. The filmmakers recruited people from the neighborhood who live these lives. They knew that the actors would hardly even need a script. They know what's going on there. And it works fine.
I agree with that completely. It was just, it was almost a documentary. It was just seamless. It didn't seem implausible, anything that happened. The behavior of the people seemed totally natural.
So that one again is called Ajami, A-J-A-M-I, and it's from Israel.
The next movie it's an Italian movie, Vinceri, and it focused on the woman who is the paramour of Benito Mussolini, whom he denounced and disclaimed, and she wound up in a madhouse where she eventually died in the later 30s, spent 15 years or more in that asylum. To me, it was a fascinating movie. I came in just as there was a love scene between Mussolini and this woman, and the lighting was such that he looked like a vampire. His skin was a gleaming silver. His teeth gleamed. Very dark hair, very dark coloring of this person himself, the Mussolini character. A lot of gloom throughout the movie that reinforced that to me. I thought at first that it was indeed a vampire movie. And in effect, it was. She was totally enthralled by this vampire creature, Mussolini. And he sucked the blood out of her, the life out of her, and then discarded her. She had no rights and no identity after this one enthrallment with Mussolini.
I found that the treatment of this historical incident was rather goofy, actually. And if you've seen Mussolini in news film, and there is some news film mixed in here, if you've seen Mussolini in newsreels, you know that he was a pretty goofy character, just the way he carried himself. He was full of himself. I thought the treatment by the screenwriter was also pretty goofy. I didn't learn anything about history or about the characters from this. Another film from Italy in this year's festival is called Mid-August Lunch. The premise is that the lead character, who actually is the director and screenwriter, Gianni Di Gregorio, he's 59 years old, and he takes care of his mother, and it's a loving relationship. His landlord asks him to take care of his mother for a day or so, and then someone else does the same, and Gianni winds up with 4 elderly women that he has to serve meals to and just keep company for a day or two. It's charming. It's a good premise, but unfortunately, I think it needed to be expanded somehow. It's just an hour and 15 minutes, and I don't know if I could recommend that you should spend $10 on a ticket to Mid-August Lunch. Next, from Romania, is a film called Police, Adjective. And this is a police procedural, an investigation of a crime combined with a linguistics lesson. If that sounds weird, it is. But unfortunately, it's also very tedious. We watch a policeman on stakeout. He stands there, he smokes a cigarette. He stands there some more, smokes a cigarette. We spend quite a long time watching him eat a meal, and those are the exciting parts. There is some dry humor, which might work in a more action-packed film, but this just is a bore, sorry to say. That's Police Adjective from Romania. Now, if you are reading the descriptions from the Film Center, you will learn that this film won the Jury Prize at Cannes and the Grand Critics Prize at the Cannes Film Festival. I don't know how. I'm sorry.
Our next movie is from Russia. It's called Hipsters, and it was a combination of a fantasy and a musical trying to depict the mental picture that Russian kids had of America. It's placed exactly in the middle, the worst of the Stalinist years in Russia, the bleakest, most colorless, the most unhip, 1955. And it traces out this group of Russian kids in Moscow who are trying to be hip, and they absorb all of what they think being hip is about, that they've gained from magazines and hearsay about and through the radio of what's going on in America, what America is about at the same time that they're dealing with Stalin. And the limits for what's accepted as truth are broad and vague. And it makes for an entertaining movie, but not very substantial. And I think we both agree that the ending, which is this Pepsi generation crowd scene of uplift and play on and we win, this very positive conclusion is not fitting for the movie. Bruce, what did you think?
Well, talking about the end first, I've seen a lot of films from Russia since communism ended there in 1991, and most of them have been pretty bleak. They talk about the more recent economic situation. And here we have this big musical with huge production numbers and a cast of thousands, and it was a lot of fun. So I agree that it's entertaining. It's not plausible. There was no entertainment district in Moscow where people could be driving American convertibles and wearing loud, colorful, garish clothes. So it's not plausible. But if you'll just let that go as a member of the audience, I think it's pretty entertaining.
Because it is ultimately about the survival of the human spirit and individuality and the need to express yourself and to have fun.
Okay, our next film is from South Korea, one of three films from South Korea. It's called The Good, the Bad, the Weird. And yes, it is a takeoff on The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. I found it's not nearly as good. There are three characters. One is dressed like Clint Eastwood. One is like the man who played the character Angel Eyes in Good, Bad, and the Ugly. And there's a guy who plays the Eli Wallach role, the buffoon. But this film has even less plot than The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, and more. It's almost a continuous chase scene. There is an awful lot of shooting and stabbing and explosions and horses getting killed. And I really don't think all the horses getting killed were created by computer-generated imaging. I think some animals were killed in the making of this movie, which is quite a problem. It was made by Korean filmmakers and set in Manchuria, China, by the way. Another Korean film, however, that I liked very much is called Mother. It's about a woman who is the mother of a young adult boy who is mildly retarded and gets himself in trouble. He is framed for the killing of a girl and can't explain himself, can't express himself well enough for anyone to decide whether he did it or not. And we, the viewers, don't know. So this is a mystery. And in fact, the mother realizes that the police have found an easy mark, and they just call it an open and shut case and put him in jail. So she decides she's going to be a detective, and she's a pretty good one. But she has a few issues herself, and they get in the way of her police work.
I think this movie, Mother, a South Korean film, is a sleeper, that the performance by the woman portraying the mother, Mother Courage, literally, is phenomenal, counterposing her with the son who's defenseless against the police is an obvious opportunity for a real character development. So it's fun to watch that.
Yes, they are good, well-developed and well-acted characters, both the mother and the son. And it's a good plot line. By the way, there's an ending, and then the film goes on. There's another ending and a third ending, all within a few minutes. Any one of them would have been a good ending. It's so hard for a filmmaker to end a film well. In this case, we have three good endings. So all in all, a strong recommendation for Mother from South Korea. A film from Switzerland called Home. This has a pretty unusual premise. A family is squatting in a house right on the shoulder of a freeway, a limited access highway, that has been closed for 10 years. They're having a good time. The father has a day job, and the rest of them, two teenage girls, a young boy, and the wife, who is played by Isabelle Huppert, a leading French actress, live their lives without having to deal with society very much. And then the highway is reopened, and their lives change. So we see the different ways that the different family members react to the change in their lives. The highway is opened. They have heavy traffic, including lots of trucks, just roaring right by their house, just a few feet away, loud noise. Everything is different. Again, this is a case, though, where we aren't given quite enough information to understand why each member of the family reacts differently. I won't tell you whether the family decides to move out or to stay or to adapt. There's some of each, actually, but I won't give the ending away. It's a decent film. There are some laughs because it's both a farce and a drama, and I would recommend it.
The next movie is from Tunisia. It's called Wedding Song. Its focus is the friendship of two girls. One is Muslim, the other is Jewish. This is in Tunis. During the Second World War, the Allies are in the process of bombing the place in preparation for the massive North African invasion. The Germans are there. Their presence is huge. The movie succeeded, in my mind, because of the resilience of this friendship in spite of all the things torquing it in different directions. I loved, occasionally you'd hear somebody shout out, one of the mothers, that there's a war going on, as though we didn't know. But the point being that there are these massive forces pulling at this friendship, and yet it seems to endure.
This festival, even though it's an international festival, every year includes a number of films from the United States, but they're not from the major studios. These are independent films by filmmakers who don't have millions, but they often have a good idea. Some are dramas and some are documentaries. One of the documentaries this year is called The Art of the Steal. And this is about something that you may have heard about in the news. One of the world's great art collections was created by a man named Albert Barnes, who lived outside Philadelphia. He was an industrialist, made millions in the first part of the 20th century. And this may be the greatest collection of 20th century art in the world. And that's really saying something. He did not want to open up his collection, which he had hung around his mansion, did not want to open it up to the general public. He thought only people who really understand art should be able to see it. And he knew that the general public did not have the level of understanding that he thought was necessary. He did start a school for artists, and he wanted students to see his collection. In his will, he wanted these wishes continued. However, when he died in 1951, certain people started drooling over this collection, and there was a movement to move all the paintings and sculpture to Philadelphia and open it up to the world. The movie is about the intrigue of some rich people, some powerful politicians, some powerful foundation directors and others, and the way they try to destroy the wishes of this man's last will and testament. It's a good story, more of a drama than anything else. I will tell you that we hardly see any of the art in the film. If you're going to see the art, this is not the way to do it. But it's a good story, a scandal, absolutely a scandal. In 2012, you'll be able to go to a museum right in Philadelphia and see all these great works.
Finally, we'll talk about October Country, which is produced by local filmmakers Donald Mosher and Mike Palmieri. To me, it was an excellent movie. It was a documentary done in upstate New York about several generations of a family who were stuck. They're poor. They are low on ambition. One thing that comes across that's really depressing is that they seem resigned to their low state. They don't expect to get out. They want to get out, and yet they just don't feel confident enough that they can make the great leap. The movie itself was very well edited. Visually, it was wonderful. It was just extremely well done. It was very well composed. There were no lurches or splits in the way it developed. The movie concludes with the Halloween gathering, which is quite a spectacle, of all the members of this family. And as the mother, who is the basic or as close to a matriarch as you can feature for this gathering, says, they, quote, don't have to admit who they are or that they even came. And that's exactly the way they want it to be. They can't believe that they're part of this family, yet they're increasingly resigned to it as you go from generation to generation, it seems. There's a lot to say here. There's rape. There's a lot of violence involved. But it's a wonderful portrayal of human beings who, it feels as a moviegoer that they're sitting across from you explaining their lives as they see it. It's very believable and very poignant for that reason.
That's a pretty strong recommendation. I have not seen the film, but I hope to. It's showing only once. Most of the films in the festival are shown twice. A few are shown three times. This one is being shown only once on the 17th. However, we have learned that it will be at Cinema 21 in May. It's called October Country. So those are the International Film Festival films that we've seen so far. I hope we haven't made you more confused. That's just a small sampling, though. There are many films in the festival. We know that some of you like to go to whatever film has been brought in from a country that you are from or your parents or that you have some connection with, and that's fine. We also know that some of you like a certain genre of film or dislike a certain genre of film. So we hope we have steered you in the right direction toward or away from. But we encourage you to look on the Northwest Film Center website or to pick up a printed guide to the 33rd Portland International Film Festival, read the descriptions, and take a chance. Ticket information is available on the website nwfilm.org or by calling 503-276-4310 from 12 to 6 p.m. or by going to the ticket office in the Portland Art Museum's Mark Building, 1119 Southwest Park Avenue at Main. Thanks to our engineer, Emily Young, and to KBOO's AM News and Public Affairs Director, Kathleen Stevenson. For KBOO, I'm Bruce Silverman.
And this is Jay Thiemeyer.
See you at the movies.